From Italy to the Canadian Rockies and beyond, Gazette Travel makes exploring the world easy and stress-free. See our full lineup of tours at thegazette.com/travel.
Well, welcome back to Hawk Off the Press. My name is Madison Herzig. I am the Gazette Iowa football beat reporter, and I am joined by a former Gazette reporter here to talk some football, particularly Iowa's football schedule, Scott Docterman. Welcome back to the Gazette, all things Gazette, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be with you on the third edition of Hawk Off the Press after starting the On Iowa podcast with Mark Morehouse in 2011, and now kind of the next iteration. It's always good to be with you.
Feels very full circle, I'm sure, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun though. We had a good time when we did that for about 11 years. So
there you go. Nice. Yeah. That's a good run. Well, we appreciate you coming back. It's always, I've always had a good time chatting it up with you. And well, we have a lot to talk about with the football schedule getting released officially. Last night, the Big Ten announced the conference schedule. We already knew Iowa's three non-conference games ahead of time. So we have the full 2026 schedule. And Scott, having covered the entire Big Ten, you and I were just talking about how you were in Miami for Indiana's national championship win about 8 days ago. I mean, what were some of your first impressions when you got a hold of Iowa's football schedule for next season?
For the Iowa schedule, it's like split into two when it comes to the Big Ten. You know, your first three games, it's almost like an old Big Ten West schedule. And it really is in some ways. Is one, your first three games are against teams outside the Big Ten West. You have a bye. Your last six are against all, you know, it's like getting the gang back together again. And you're playing all six of those old buddies of yours from the West Division. And so immediately, though, you wonder, okay, who are you playing? You already knew who you were playing. It was just when. And to get the three best teams on the schedule immediately, two of the three on the road, and then, of course, Ohio State, anytime it comes to Kinnick, it's been 9 years. They've only played at Kinnick once since 2010, just to tell you how screwy this league has been with the expansions and what have you. When you look at that, it's a little bit jarring if you're an Iowa fan, because at Michigan, this year, I think Iowa could have beat Michigan. I think I would have beat Michigan, but, you know, you're on the road. Ohio State at home, you never take that one for granted. And then at Washington, one of the most difficult places in the country to play. It's an environment, I think, that's comparable to Kinnick for sure, or Autzen Stadium in Oregon. And so the fact they had a 22-game winning streak at home until this year when Ohio State snapped it. So three very difficult games right off the bat for Iowa in conference play. But then if you do something, win a game, at least one game, and then have your bye and you're healthy and things are progressing, then you look at the rest of the schedule and you think, yeah, this is pretty manageable. And not only that, I think Iowa would have a chance to put itself into CFP contention.
Well, I think this is one of those schedules where you look at it and at face value on paper, your eye is automatically going to those first three Big Ten games because of how much of a gauntlet that is. And I think a lot of times it's one of those situations where we might look back at this schedule again in August and we have a bigger picture or a better picture of what this Iowa football team is really going to look like. Because the reality is as much as this, we can look at this schedule and start predicting wins, predicting what's going to be a potentially easy game, what's going to be really difficult. Iowa doesn't have a starting quarterback yet. Iowa lost a couple key players to the portal to eligibility. Holes have to be filled, and they just announced their transfer portal class right before we started recording. So there's a lot of pieces that are still being put together. But I have to agree with you that I like the fact that you get a little bit of nostalgia. You're like, yes, divisions are back just for this one season. But at the same time, you do look at it, and it is a pretty manageable schedule. I do want to say the Illinois game on November 21st, I'm calling it now. That game is going to have a lot more implications than people might give it credit for. There's something about that matchup, the fact that it's on the road, it's against a well-known former Hawkeye in Brett Bielema. I look at that game and I'm like, that one's gonna mean something. And I have a feeling that it really will come November.
Yeah, I did stupidly, I guess you could say, is it just published this morning, is I ranked every game in the Big Ten schedule from 1 to 81. And I wrote something about every single game. So
Look at that.
I had that in the top 20. I had that number 18. In fact, I had that above Iowa, Washington, which I had at 23. And a lot of that is that, you know, it is a border feud. They haven't played for a couple of years. Now, basketball, it is the number one rivalry for Iowa. But football, it kind of depends. They've had bits and pieces. But this is the 80th time that they're going to play. Last time they went to Champaign, it was one of the greatest worst games of all time. It was 9-6, all field goals.
Let's go.
But you know what? There were 13 players drafted in the first three rounds on that, in that team, and both teams. And then some of them that played in that game are still going to be drafted in that range. I think 21 total. And that didn't include Jennings Dunker or Bo Stevens or a few players on the Illinois side that played. So that game, which was an offensive disaster, a game that never should go in any, and it was honestly the most poorly called game by Brian Ferentz in a poorly called era. I think that this one was, but still, it was everything. So they play each other very hard in 2023, which it was last time that they played. Iowa clinched the West Division by beating them 15-13 at Kinnick Stadium, and that was on Caleb Johnson's like 40-yard run with like 3.5 minutes to go. So this was a so this is a rivalry game, and it's at a really important juncture. I mean, it's the second to last game of the season. So I agree that out of the games down the stretch, it is the most important one. You also got your three trophy games, which are always spirited. None of the three were any good last year. I mean, Iowa outscored them 118-19. And then Northwestern, you go to a new stadium. It's going to be, I visited, I wrote about it. It's 35,000 seats. It's got a canopy all over every seat there. It is an amazing, amazing seat, stadium. It is as good as you'll ever see the views of the field. In fact, like, it's not really nosebleedy, but the seating structure is so close to the field. It's closer than you get at the United Center for the Bulls or for Big Ten basketball coming up. It is amazing. So that game's also played in, you know, against Northwestern. And then most hated rival, Purdue, comes to town. You know,
that new stadium, I listen, as a college football fan, I was like, I've been intrigued with the Northwestern stadium since they announced that renovation a couple years ago. The way that you're talking about that, I'm like, oh, wait, I'm excited. I like seeing new things. That'll be fun. But I love the fact that you mentioned it. It's going to feel so like intimate and on top of each other. I think that's you said that, and I was like, oh, that's exciting. That's very fun to hear.
It's unbelievable. I did a tour with Pat Ryan, who's paying for it, $900 million. And it's just, it's indescribable how good it'll be. I mean, people immediately look at it like only 35,000 seats. What are they doing? I mean, the other teams, you know, can fill up the rest like it did at the old stadium, but you know, they want it to be purple, and they have a, like, it's like the basketball arena, Ryan Arena over there, because like the students will be on the end zone, but they're so close to the field. And in fact, the players have to go through the student section to get to the field. And then there's like glass seating in the end zones. I mean, it's going to be otherworldly. It's going to be a huge home field advantage, which they've never had, because every time they've played some of the regional teams that are very popular, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio State for sure, even Nebraska, which isn't that close, but still, that a minimum half the stadium was filled by those opposing fans. Now it's going to be different. And then the tailgating areas in Evanston. I mean, Evanston is a beautiful city in the fall. The fall foliage right off the lake, it's incredible in North Chicago. But to see this game, I would recommend it if people want to go. I mean, 2 years ago they went to, or 3 years ago, two or three, they went to Wrigley, and it was great. And Iowa filled 95% of Wrigley for that. This one, get your tickets to it. I think it's going to be worth it. It's going to be a fun environment.
Well, let's keep scoping backwards a little bit here at the Big Ten as a whole, not just Iowa's schedule, but just when you look at how this schedule as a conference is built. I know that you do a little bit more of a bigger picture aspect with your job at The Athletic. What have you made of some of this bigger picture look at the entire Big Ten schedule. Obviously, the October 17th weekend is the one that's going to capture a lot of people's eyes. But I'm just curious, from an overarching standpoint, what have you made of how the conference handled scheduling the teams this year?
This is the first time in the 3 years that the Big Ten has went to 18 teams to where it's a 13-week schedule instead of a 14-week schedule. So it had to be very creative in how it put the schedule together, simply because in the past, when a West Coast team would go east, a lot more often than not, they came back to a bye just to make sure that they have ample ability to rest and recuperate. Well, they can't always do that. They tried their best to, there were a few situations where they did, but they would put like a home game or something to make sure that they buffered that for them. But the thing that really jumps out at me first is the last three national champions all play one another. And that is, you know, the game of the year, I put it number one, is Ohio State at Indiana on October 17th. And that'll be the hottest ticket that's ever been purchased in Indiana, at least for football, maybe basketball once or twice, but just kidding.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think they finally have supplanted basketball at least a little bit, but when you look at that game, that is number one for sure. And then in November, you've got Oregon visiting Ohio State, and that's November 7th. And that is a massive game that you really acknowledge. And then never ever put out Ohio State and Michigan. You know, that is, even if the teams suck, and Michigan had sucked for a while or was not to the level of Ohio State, whenever they play, it is as big and important as any game on the schedule. And then, but some of the others that stand out to me, and, you know, I put my number four game, which Ohio State at USC, because when USC joined, this was the matchup I looked at and went, wow, okay, these are the two kind of flagships of their two conferences, with Ohio State and USC in the Pac-12. And now to play, that's, to me, that's something that'll really take root. You've got Indiana and Michigan, you got Washington and Oregon, which is probably the most underrated great rivalry in the country. They hate each other with a passion.
They very much do.
and see, everybody always glommed on to the Apple Cup and the Civil War, you know, Oregon State, Washington State. No, this is the one that they truly disliked one another. And now that they're both in the Big Ten, they play the final weekend, and there's a lot at stake. And Washington's going to be really good this year. DeMond Williams is a tremendous quarterback. And even though he had that kerfuffle where he tried to enter the portal at the same time that there was a funeral for one of the female student athletes, by then it'll probably get smoothed out. And he's one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the conference, as is Dante Moore. So you throw those on there, Indiana and Michigan. They haven't beat Michigan there since 67 in Ann Arbor. So that's incredible. Northwestern at Michigan State stands out to me because Pat Fitzgerald's coaching against his former team. He led him for 17 years. He's the greatest football player and football figure in Northwestern history. And it goes on and on. Penn State and Michigan, which is massive because they didn't play the last 2 years. Michigan and Oregon, two teams that are, you know, blue bloods, if you will, and USC and Penn State. And then you get to like Iowa's matchups with Ohio State and Michigan are really high as well. So this is the deepest Big Ten schedule we've seen as far as heavy duty matchups, thanks to Indiana joining the party. And I think overall, this is the best year the Big Ten will have in ratings coming up, because last year got smoked by the SEC until you got to the last weekend.
Well, I think one of the things that also just is the luck scenario that bodes really well for this conference was that these matchups have been known for a while. We knew who Iowa was going to play for a couple of years now. Everyone knew who they were going to play this season. It was a matter of when, which was what yesterday was for. But at that point, nobody would have expected what Indiana did this past season or the last two seasons. And I think that also heightens it as well, is that not only is it a situation where, okay, we've known these opponents and now it's just exciting to see where the pieces fall together. You have this added element of the last three national champions have been in the Big Ten. the last, I mean, for, you won a national runner-up with Washington a couple years ago as well when Michigan won the title. And so it's just like you're looking at all of these other elements to it, and that is a huge key aspect of it that you just started talking about, is the fact that this is the deepest the Big Ten is going to look in terms of schedules, but those ratings are going to skyrocket most likely this year because you have high-quality matchups almost every single week, whether Iowa's involved with it, Michigan, Penn State. There's so many question marks going on with this conference, but in a more positive light than maybe it would have been if Indiana hadn't won the national championship or if they hadn't hired Kurt Cignetti 2 years ago. Am I correct in making that statement here?
For sure. I think there's a couple of things here in play with the Big Ten. Is one, there's been a national narrative, and I work at a company that a lot of people have that same opinion, and that is that the SEC is deeper, the Big Ten's top heavy, and I could not disagree more. I mean, as you mentioned, they've had six different teams reach the semifinals in the last 3 years, counting Washington going to the championship and after the 2023 season. You've had Penn State 2 years ago that was barely out of the national title game, and on Oregon, was ranked number one a year ago going into the playoffs when it lost. Oregon's only losses have come to the eventual national champion the last 2 years. So you have those six teams right away. Then you start to look at, USC has some weapons. USC has won 9 games this year, and like Iowa, which lost 4 games by 15 points. And by the end of the year, they were as good as some of the teams to me, even in the tournament. I think that had they gotten in the way that they were playing, they could have been competitive. I don't think they would have won it, but I think they could have, depending on the matchup, maybe won a game in the tournament. And then Illinois and Washington, both 9-win teams. Penn State only won 7 games this year, but when you peel back the layers on Penn State's season, it's easy just to say they suck, they're terrible, they fired their coach. All that's true, except for they lost 5 of those 6 games by 1 score. We saw it at Kinnick Stadium it was a 1-point loss. We saw it over against Indiana, where the most incredible catch of the season took place by Omar Cooper to win that game. They played horribly against UCLA and against Northwestern, but only lost by a couple of points in both games, 1 point to Northwestern. And then Oregon, double overtime. Oregon was a national semifinal. So they were very right there. They have a team that I think a lot of people will watch, especially in the state of Iowa, because of Matt Campbell and because of the number of Cyclones he's taken there. it's like people there are a little bit like, oh, really? I don't know. But you think about it, it was kind of a smart move for Matt to bring as many as he did. I mean, he's got, let me see here. He's got 24 former Cyclones on his roster. So that's, and they have, in my opinion, I'm going through the schedules. I do this massive matrix, and they may have the easiest schedule in the Big Ten. I mean, so they have a pretty good roster, I thought, from Iowa State last year. And he sprinkled it in with a lot of their top talent that they have held over and some that they brought in. And you look at Penn State, and I mean, it wouldn't shock me at all if they won 10 games, maybe more, because of that. So, but when you add it all up, these teams are very competitive with each other and at a national level because they were really good in the tournament. So, or in the postseason. So does it leave room for any of those Indiana stories? I don't know. Penn State could be the Indiana story, but I don't think people would say that that's a Cinderella. So I don't know if I see anybody else, but it's possible. Indiana's given possibilities to everyone.
I would say it could be a return to power more so than maybe a Cinderella story. But I did want to ask you this, Scott. One thing that I noticed during the schedule reveal announcement is the announcers were talking quite a bit about how the Big Ten did their best to spread out the bye weeks evenly with a lot of these teams. It was mentioned multiple times. Iowa's bye week comes right in the middle of the season. It is that October 17th weekend where there's a couple marquee matchups, including that Ohio State Indiana game. How do you feel the Big Ten did with balancing the bye weeks? Do we feel like Iowa maybe got lucky, or do you see that there was a genuine continuous effort to make sure that bye weeks were pretty evenly distributed?
it was a major effort. And this is what they wanted to do, which was ensure that everybody had their bye week from the Big Ten. Now they can do whatever they want in their bye week if they, you know, like Northwestern decided to plug it with a non-conference game with Ball State, but that every team had their bye week between weeks 5 and 10. So right there from early October through early-ish November. And so that way you get it somewhat in the middle, but also that it's competitively equal. You didn't want somebody to have, say, week the penultimate week free and then somebody else not to. And then, and on top of that, they really wanted to avoid any games where there was kind of like an unequal rest factor, meaning that somebody had to play a team coming off a bye three times or something like that. Because that has happened in the past, especially when you've had two bye weeks during the schedule. So they were very conscious of that. And it turned out there were only +3 and -3. You know, so 12 of the teams had even rest. Like they came off a bye. A lot of times it would be two teams coming off a bye playing each other. But then there were other situations where like three teams were at -1, meaning that they played somebody who had a coming off a bye when it really didn't affect them. And that was Penn State, UCLA, and Oregon, and Rutgers, Michigan State, and of course, Ohio State got the +1. So I think that was really important, was competitive rest factor, that they just wanted to make sure that, hey, Iowa wasn't playing three teams, all of which are coming off byes or something like that. So that was a major issue. And then, you know, and then looking ahead, the Friday games have not been announced except for Iowa and Nebraska. And that will take place later this spring, weeks 2 through 12. So everything except for the final weekend is in play. Plus Labor Day weekend, which will include Friday games, more Thursdays. There's two right now, and they're both don't even matter. I mean, they're FCS games, and possibly another Sunday game because Notre Dame and Wisconsin will play on Sunday. So they're going to spread those out. That'll be announced later in the spring, and then when you get to the end of May, early June is when they go with the look-ins, which are the first three weekends in special games like. You know, for instance, Fox is saying, all right, we got Ohio State, Michigan. That's our number one pick, as it is always every year. They get the top three picks every year. And then it goes 4 and 5 alternate between between NBC and CBS. And then so is 7 and 8. And then Fox gets 8. Oh, let me back up. Top three go to Fox. 4 is either CBS or NBC, as is 5, 6, and 7. Then 8 goes back to Fox, 9 and 10 are NBC, CBS, and then 11's Fox. So Fox gets 5 out of the first 11 every year. And so that's when you'll get the look-ins, those major games that they want to really set their schedule around.
Right. And then we'll get game times and things like that as we get closer to the season. Usually that's that standard about 12 days, usually the Monday of the week before, sometime around noonish our time. Usually when we get the game times for whatever that upcoming schedule is. So all of those things that go into this, I'll say this every year, and I'll say it again, I don't envy anybody that has to put together a TV schedule or a football schedule, because there's so many moving parts, but it's so fascinating for me to listen to it. But let's hone in a little bit more on Iowa here for a second. In your opinion, Scott, we're going to pick one game. What's the game that you think is going to be maybe the hardest matchup for Iowa on paper? And why?
Anytime Ohio State's is on the field against anybody, it's a difficult matchup, and that's certainly going to be the case here. I mean, you have the most electrifying wide receiver I've ever seen, and that's Jeremiah Smith. You also have Julian Sayin, who completed 80% of his passes. And whoever else they throw out there, it's Ohio State. You just can't forget about him now. When you look, and I mean, it wasn't that long ago when he was a true freshman and he's posting up TJ Hall, basically put his hand down and caught on his head and caught a pass up here over at the Death Star, Ohio Stadium. He's a terror. No matter how you can bracket him, you can try to match up as best you can. He's a guy that if he was going to the NFL, if he's not number one overall pick, he'd be number two, and he's only a true sophomore. So you got to skew towards Ohio State. But that being said, if I was to look at what's another one, because Ohio State's Ohio State, it's definitely Washington. I mean, this is a team that rarely loses at home, and it's good, and it's got a good coach and Jed Fish, and Demond Williams, as I said, is a tremendous quarterback. Had a 22-game win streak going into last year that was broken by Ohio State, and then Oregon did beat them at home as well. Oregon is pretty good as well, too, but that is a place where you've got to play your best if you want to win, because it is one of the most difficult environments, and it's a great environment. I'm glad that Iowa gets to go there because it is something different, but it's not going to be easy. So those are the two that really stand out for me. I mean, obviously people wonder about Michigan. I think Iowa's a matchup with Michigan. I think it just kind of depends on what we see. I mean, the two position groups, Maddie, that really stand out for me for sure is quarterback, of course, because if Iowa doesn't have a quarterback, Iowa's going back to, 7-5-ville. And two is defensive line, because they lost so many pieces there. Six rotational pieces. So even though you get newbies, you get guys who grow, that you just don't know. And that's what really matters in this league is offensive and defensive line play. So if Iowa can get that to par, going to Ann Arbor, it won't be easy, but I think they can match up. The other two I would say is, and then we're talking in January.
Right.
those other two are very, very difficult. Not saying it's impossible, because Iowa's a really good program, but I think it's something you just have to kind of respect that those two games are going to be very, very difficult.
For sure. And I'm going to throw out a couple dates here. 1954 was the last time that Iowa played Michigan and Ohio State in back-to-back weeks. And it's only the fourth time in program history as well. And then this was one that I did some digging on earlier. 1963 was the last time the University of Iowa played Washington in Seattle. They've played a bunch of other times since then, but that was the last time it's happened in Seattle. So ironically enough, I feel like this is kind of strange to say when you have a head coach that's been there for incoming 28 seasons, but there's a couple firsts that we're looking at in the Kirk Ferentz era, 28 years in. That's, you didn't think that was going to happen, but it's, I don't know, that we could talk about that three-game stretch to start conference play for hours, I'm sure, with just how many layers are involved. But that was something that just jumped out at me, was just the fact that it's, I mean, anytime you play Ohio State and Michigan back-to-back, regardless of the order, regardless of if it's home or away or both, you're automatically looking at, okay, you're looking at like a juggernaut of 2 weeks right there. And then you add in a West Coast trip, which historically has not necessarily boded well for the Hawkeyes, especially in recent years. I'm curious, what's the, obviously 3-0 is the best case scenario. What do you think is maybe the most realistic best case scenario for Iowa to start conference play heading into that bye week?
I would probably say 1-2 is mm-hmm. probably what you just on paper, what you would think. And that's saying that they're going to win the first three games, which, hey, they've lost 3 out of 4 to Iowa State now. It's a completely different Iowa State franchise is what it was. But if you're going into Michigan, to me, that's probably the best of the matchups right now today for Iowa. If they were playing Washington at home, I would say that one would not be as daunting necessarily. I mean, I think that they would, but and then Ohio State, wherever you play them, is going to be difficult. Now, granted, this is the first time they played Ohio State at home since Woodshed, right. 2017, 55-24 massacre that Iowa invoked. And that team Ohio State had was, had a lot of talent. I mean, 9 players who were either in first or second rounders, but Iowa had 6. So Iowa was definitely ready to compete in that game. So I would say 1-2, if you can somehow win one, you'd feel like you still got a shot, to get to the CFP, because it stays at 12 teams. They weren't mm-hmm. able to secure the play-in games. And, so you've got to kind of, to get to the playoff, which is right now the goal for every team now, it's not no longer a bowl game, that you've got to hope that you're at least 1-2 going into the bye in the Big Ten, and then feel like the rest of the schedule kind of lines up. You also know, is for Iowa is you are the hunted out of the final six games. I mean, every team hates Iowa on that schedule. Minnesota says, I mean, they chant it. But, you know, Purdue, you know, Northwestern used to under Gary, you know, and when Pat was there for sure, and Gary Barnett, Iowa would appear in red on the schedule because that was the program that they wanted to focus on because it's one that they felt like they could be like, which is Iowa was a consistent program that wasn't, you know, a monster like Ohio State or Michigan. So Northwestern built its program as tenants towards Iowa. Wisconsin, you know, last year it was 42 pushups. They should probably add the 37 more, you know, go 79 pushups. But, you know, and that's the 100th meeting in this great rivalry. As we know with Minnesota, 41-3, that comes back. With Nebraska, there's no love lost there either. And then in Illinois and Iowa has been very competitive and, you know, and it always gets very feisty with those two programs. And a lot of it is because they recruit the same players. I mean, Illinois is in Chicago, isn't, you know, Chicago's in Illinois, yet Iowa fights hard for Chicago and recruits very hard. And they recruit against each other a lot. And Brett's from just outside the Quad Cities. So, you know, there's a lot of crossover there and it gets pretty feisty in recruiting. So that'll be, you know, some spillover. And we used to say this, Mark Morehouse, who was with the Gazette, and I used to say this about Michigan State, Wisconsin, and Iowa back in the old days, which was there were three polar bears fighting over the same sheet of ice. And I think, you know,
that's a good one. Yeah.
I think with Illinois and Iowa, it's like, you know, they're two guys fighting over the same canoe or something, you know, just the Mississippi, because they're really battling. So if Iowa plays the way it did last year in the final six games, it wins all six, no question. But it's a new year, and other teams get better too. So I would say, you know, it still should be fun.
Yeah, it's always fun to speculate when it's like way too early to really like kind of hone in deep, because right now, as we've talked about, there are still so many question marks about the schedule, about all of these teams individually. We know the key returners, but we don't know who else is coming, who else is going to make an impact where yet. So that's what makes this fun, and that's what makes this last question for you, Scott, fun. All right, time to pick. If you could pick a record on January 28th, 2026 for Iowa, What is your first glance, 24 hours after having this schedule, tentative record for Iowa, and why?
I'm going to go 9-3, and I think they probably win one of those first three in the Big Ten, and I think they lose one of them down the stretch. I don't know which one. I don't know what the other teams are going to be like. You know, who knows? Maybe Wisconsin just completely retools and Luke Fickell wins Coach of the Year, you know, and then so it's Halloween. It's a bad Halloween in Iowa City. I don't know. But, you know, I would just say 9-3 at this very time. And it's because I don't know what quarterback defensive line are going to look like.
Yeah.
If I did, I would completely buy in. I do think, though, that there's, if quarterback play is comparable to last year, the last 2 months of the season under Mark Gronowski, if it's Jeremy Hicklinski or it's Hank Brown, or even, you know, maybe, I mean, who knows, Jimmy Sullivan or somebody could leap up there, but I'm not expecting it. I think it'll be Jeremy Hicklinski. But if he plays to a comparable level as Mark Gronowski, you know, and if the defensive line, it needs more pass rush. It didn't get quite as good a pass rush this year as it has in the past. But if the defensive line plays well, then I don't see 11-1 out of the realm of possibility. But I also think that, you know, that's all. Unfortunately for Iowa, the bunching of those games so early doesn't allow for the team to get better. Because I think if we were to see those opponents in 2025 in that bunch early, we didn't see the offense play very well. I mean, Mark Gronowski was not playing very well in the first month of the season. The passing game was atrocious. The running game was still kind of working its way through things, and the defense was good, but not to the level it was the final. I mean, remember the Rutgers game where it was just back and forth, and Rutgers had a really good pass offense. It was underrated, but still, as the season got progressed, as typically happens with Iowa, then they got, you know, really good in those areas. But I do think So I'll go 9-3 for now, but I do think that there's upward mobility with that.
I feel like 9-3 is a pretty safe bet to start the year, because you're looking at, I mean, 3 is the magic number for CFP potential. This is the first year we saw a 3-loss team actually make the field, but 3 is usually two or three losses is usually that realm of you're under consideration. It's a matter of who the losses are at this point. So in the positive light to Iowa fans is, yeah, okay, a 3-loss season is maybe not necessarily what they want. They want something maybe with double digits for wins, but you're looking at a scenario of, okay, you know, while we're still having these question marks, there's a chance to grow. I have to agree with you with 9-3. I think it's going to be one of those situations where, because there's so much turnover at Iowa State, I have to lean the advantage towards Iowa, especially with it being in Kinnick this year. So I do think the Hawkeyes potentially start out 3-0 in non-conference play, and then they go 1-2 in that first 3-game conference play stretch. And so then I think you're looking at a scenario where maybe one of those old school Big Ten West games maybe gets by Iowa late, and that's how they end up in that scenario. But who knows? We could be looking at this in August thinking entirely differently. We could be looking at this in November thinking that we're both just complete idiots for saying this now. And that's just how college football works. Yeah.
Things change on a daily basis. Yeah. So
exactly.
I will add that we don't know how it's all going to play out, and things can completely change. And I do think that this is a decent schedule. The problem, I'll say this, that I went through the mock draft selection last fall and went through how everything gets selected. If Iowa goes 9-3 with this schedule, Iowa will not get in the play. It just won't. I mean, because if let's say they lose their first 3, then everybody will say, well, who did they beat? You know,
right. Yeah.
You know, and even this year, it was that way too. At 8-4, lost to some really good teams, played really well against good teams, but never really beat any good teams. You would have to, at minimum, probably go 10-2, and you'd have to beat, you'd have to not only beat one of those 3 teams, which you would have to beat them decisively and then have them be good to get really into that.
Yeah, remain good throughout the rest of the season. So, and it becomes one of those things where that's just out of your hands at that point, and goes back to the football mentality or the athlete mentality of control what you control and you see what happens. But Scott, this has been so much fun. I've always enjoyed getting to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining. It's been great to get your perspective, and it's been fun to have you rejoin the Gazette podcast here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Maddie. I'm always happy to, and best of luck surviving through the basketball season.
Yes, we got more of that coming. If you guys like this content, we have a Hawk Off the Press podcast coming out every single week, plus our free newsletter, which you can sign up for at thegazette.com with the same name, Hawk Off the Press. That comes out every Friday morning. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Travel should be simple. With Gazette Travel, every detail is handled. You just show up and enjoy with fellow Iowans. View available trips at thegazette.com/travel.